It's that time again for the EMS Educast, your internet radio show about EMS education by EMS educators for EMS educators, with our fantastic roundtable of hosts, the EMS Funky Bunch, with online educator, author, and social media addict Greg Fries, Canadian educator and author Rob Terrio, the host of the EMS Garage and the king of all EMS media, Chris Montera, and yours truly, the EMS educator from Kentucky, Buck Ferris. Hey everybody, good evening. We're going to do episode 34 for October 7th, 2009. We're going to be talking to John Dillon of C3 Softworks to discuss gaming and education in the classroom and out. But as always, before we do that, we're going to go around with the hosts. And Mr. Rob Terrio, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing very well, thanks. I'm out of town tonight. I'm in Halifax on a Canadian Medical Association accreditation survey. So
you lucky guy.
Having a great time here by the ocean, gobbling up all the seafood I can stuff down my gullet.
Oh, man. This isn't our month, right?
Sorry?
This isn't our month, right? If it's an R month, you get oysters. If it's an R month, you get mussels. It's an R month.
Yeah, R month's up.
Yeah, so you're doing the melted butter thing by the sea.
I'm feasting on lobster and salmon, and of course, the seafood's, you know, considerably less expensive than it is in Ontario, where I'm from. So, I'm gorging. eat till it hurts. That's my motto this week.
Well, yeah, and what you're doing tonight with the accreditation stuff, that may be something we need to discuss in a future podcast for the United States and for Canada. It seems to be affecting all of us. And even though you're having fun by the seashore, I know you're going through a lot of anxiety as well. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Accreditation is a grueling process, but it is the best quality assurance and CQI process you can go through for your program.
I gotcha. Well, Greg Fries, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Gentlemen, I'm doing wonderful, and I'll just make a quick splash on the ocean theme. I started using Google Wave earlier today. I got an invite. If and when I can invite other people, you guys will be at the top of my list, as will our loyal listeners. So stand by before you ask me for an invite. I'll do it when I can.
Okay. So are we doing education things with Google Wave? Will we see something on your blog?
If I can... It's really perplexing. Twitter's so simple, and this is the three or four people I've connected with so far, like, I don't know. I mean, they seem like nice folks, but we have no known commonalities, so I'm trying to establish that.
It's like that old Seinfeld joke, everybody's there, but you're all saying, I got nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
You got this big fancy automobile, but nowhere to go.
It's not like Google to be perplexing either. That sounds interesting.
Oh, no, it wouldn't.
They're raising the bar.
Yeah, it's kind of like the spaceship landed in your backyard, and you're just trying to make contact. You're like, what?
Yeah, I'm knocking on the metal door, like, hello. Don't know if I should run or if I should get the pry bar. But let's roll.
All right, but before we talk to our guest, we have to talk about our sponsor, which is GoToMyPC, the folks at Citrix and their software. And if you're an EMS educator, you've had this happen to you before. I know you have. Everything is on your computer at home, and it's not in the classroom. You open up your laptop, you're ready to teach, you're ready to go, and you lost your PowerPoint. You don't know where it is. Everything, when you work at different locations, you have to copy files on a flash drive. You have to do that trick that I do sometimes, which is have two email accounts and you email documents to yourself. Or if you do that thing, which I totally fail up, is trying to sync from one device to your laptop. It's what a hassle, okay? It's a terrible hassle. But the solution, all right, is here. And my recommendation is to use the GoToMyPC software. It's remote access to your computer from any other computer, anytime. Not just the laptop that you own, but any computer with an internet connection. And that's all you need, just one internet connection anywhere. You probably need a little more than dial-up, but any broadband connection will get you going. You can use any program on your computer. You can work on any file. You can check your email. You can access network resources. It's easy to set up. and use and secure as online banking. It uses an HTTPS connection, just like your bank does, and so nobody can eavesdrop with you on the network. All right, for our listeners, can try Go to My PC free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited remote access free. And for the special offer, you must visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, for your free trial. And the folks at Citrix, they make really good secure software. I use it myself. I'm actually a paying customer. I use their kind of bigger brother project product, GoToAssist. But GoToMyC is fantastic for people like EMS educators who work in so many different places. If you're teaching at that fire department and you got your office over here and you work at home and you screw up and you leave something somewhere, this is the way to get it fixed. Anyway, gotomypc.com/podcast. And tonight, our guest, John Dillon. And he's been a paramedic for, what, it was about 30 years or so?
I'm afraid so.
Is that? It's kind of like an aging. Hi, I'm John. I've been a paramedic for 30 years. But it's not the only thing you do. You also work for a little software house called C3 Softworks. And you guys make educational games that can be used inside the classroom. Is that right?
That's correct. And for the web and learning management systems. And yeah, absolutely.
Spread it and tell us what you do. Introduce it in the way you want to.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of interesting when people ask I'm the founder of C3 Softworks, but everything we're doing here really came out of EMS education, which I've been an educator for many, many, many years. And I'm sure just like you guys, you know, I work for a public safety department and I work on the police side. We have police officer paramedics. And I got to tell you, police officers, I trained police officers for 15 years and I cannot think of a tougher group. Except when you have a police officer who's also a paramedic, it's kind of like a caustic agent together. So as an educator, I always had to find ways to really engage my audience, be it humor, video, or graphics, to get them involved. And as kind of a natural progression, quite a few years back, or about 5-6 years ago, started getting to use games in the classroom and really kind of evolved into a full-blown business from the standpoint, really started to see the value of using games to deliver not only review content, but also deliver content more effectively than I did with a lot of traditional PowerPoint presentations. And it's just been, software side, put that on the side. Truly as an instructor, I've really started to see the value of using games to deliver information and review content in the classroom. In fact, I go to Michigan to speak at the EMS Educators Conference there on Friday. So, yeah, so it's kind of a lot of stuff, and one of the biggest things I do is help instructors see games in a different light, really kind of take away how they've been brainwashed and how to use games, get them to look at a different light, and I got to be honest with you, it doesn't take long. It's just really getting people to see it in just a totally different view than they've ever seen it before.
Well, how did you get – what was the first instance where you said, you know, I really need a game to this? Do you know way back when?
I've been teaching infectious diseases here in the, you know, since the inception of the 1910-1030 rule back in 1992. And, you know, and I own a training company. So I did this talk literally a few hundred times a year. In fact, it's one of the things I became kind of infamous for. I kind of became known as the fecal guy, but you have to hear my talk. But yeah, it's not really flattering. But right. Point of that was it was a really dry topic. And I was actually fairly good at it. And the thing is with it is that I went back to these groups year after year after year. And you know, there's only so many ways you can say blood is bad. I mean, if you want to look at the silver lining of the H1, you know, the flu pandemic or the problems we're seeing today, at least you can talk about something different today than, you know, a couple of years ago. You know, it's just kind of tough to keep it, you know, fresh and new. But that was really kind of the fulcrum to really what can I do differently here to deliver the same content and be more effective and also, you know, make it more exciting for my audience so they get more out of it. And so the infectious diseases was probably the key thing because, quite frankly, I can't think of a more drier topic to teach.
Maybe Wemyss is drier for sure.
What's WMIS?
Oh, workplace health and safety.
Okay.
It's a, all the MSDS data sheets and all that stuff makes you want to poke your eyes out with a sharp pencil.
Yeah.
Oh, is that Canadian? Is that a Canadian thing?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you guys have something very similar. It's like a
we have a WHERE.
Okay.
WHERE? Okay. Yeah.
WHERE in Minnesota.
I had a lockout tagout class that almost drove me to suicide one night. So only so many ways you can say shut off this machine. but yeah, no, that sounds great. And you know, it's kind of interesting you said to me because most of the times when I've seen the, you know, little PowerPoint games, the Jeopardy games inside the classroom or something like that, it was at the end to review. But you're saying you deliver content initially like that as well.
Well, right. And I think, you know, let me just back up a little bit. The first time, you know, I did a the first prototype of what you see today, the game we had, was about 5 years ago, and it was at Woodbury, and we were doing what is called the AWARE and combination infectious disease. The year before and the previous years, I'd always done it as a lecture, and I had a PowerPoint. And when we came in and did it, the first time we did the game, it first of all, the audience loved it. But to be very, very candid, I was really interested in how did it work to deliver the content. Well, when we talked to the participants, I mean the students, I mean all we heard was, oh, this is the best training we ever had. But when we really got right down to it, we realized we really missed the mark. You really can't go, and this is probably my first criticism of people who use games, is they a lot of times will gauge the success of a game, or and sometimes even a presentation, based on did the students, you know, enjoy it. And of course, that's not really a measurable when it comes to education. In fact, one of the command staff really put it perfectly. He said, you know, it was a lot of fun, but it really kind of missed the mark. Well, the reason it missed the mark is I didn't actually deliver the first game. I was out of town, but the EMS coordinator did do it. You know, we went back and we talked about it. He said, you know, they went through it so quick, didn't really review anything. Half the group didn't really understand what the question was and why it was right. And so, and we also talked to some of the people, like some of the people that really weren't, you know, really knowledgeable on the topic. And of course, when I'd ask what you think of it, they said, oh, it was great. But I said, no, what did you learn? And we started to realize that they didn't get a chance to really grasp material. So we, after that, we just started to tweak it a little bit. We started to realize, okay, we're going to read the question. You know, you can't ring in. We're going to make sure we add teaching points afterwards. And we slowed down the game dramatically. And over the next 8 sessions, it got better and better and better. And then we started to realize it didn't take us much to go from this game that was still enjoyable for the, you know, it's a highly successful game from the student's perspective. But then by the time we got done in the 3rd or 4th session, we got better at delivering the content. And we started to realize that as we put it together, it really was, you know, I equated to PowerPoint. I was able to, once we got going with it, I was able to cover the same information that I did with my traditional PowerPoint presentation by just tweaking the questions and the questions in themselves. And as it has evolved over the years, I realized the questions were really just a bullet point. This question is going to lead me down a path that I'm going to talk about this. And sometimes I'll set up a question with a preview slide. Let's talk about the N95 mask and what it is. Let's have a question, when should you dispose of it? And then let's do a follow-up right afterwards and talk about, you know, more information. So one question may have 3 or 4 different points, just like a PowerPoint slide would.
So and when you start, kind of like a Socratic game show, in a way.
For the most part, yeah. Right, that's a pretty good analogy. Right. That sounded very intelligent, by the way.
This teacher who's just done the Socratic method, and he will not tell a student anything. He will drag it from them. And I got to tell him about this. I'll tell you what, because this would be a more entertaining way for him to do that. But I didn't want to interrupt you so much, though.
Oh,
it was just
no, that's fine. Trying. I think that's one of the things that I have learned over the years. In fact, when I talk about using games, I use Woodbury as really my test, because I test everything there. And I made probably the same mistakes that most instructors do with games. And as we evolved, we started to realize, first of all, if you see me use a game in the classroom, and as people come out and see me use games, they realize I'm not a game show host. I'm not playing that role. I don't care who wins. I don't care who loses. In fact, we're calling it a game, but really it is a tool that I'm using to deliver content. And the best way I like to tell instructors with it is because most people look at games in a very limited view. Well, we'll do it every once in a while. We'll do it as a review. And in most cases, even as a review, they're not being very efficient with it. And what I tell people is, you know, use the questions to help you, you know, what point do you want to cover this question? So, for example, I'll just throw a question out there. I may ask you in an infectious disease talk, the group, you know, Mary Malone is infamous for what? You know, and I've done it open-ended, multiple choice, and now I'm using audience response pads. And people get it right or get it wrong. But what Mary Malone allows me to talk about is Typhoid Mary. And Typhoid doesn't have a lot of reference relevance today, but it is similar to hepatitis A in the fact that they're both shed through the gastrointestinal system. Those two words don't belong in the same sentence, oral, fecal. It could help, you know, if Mary would have simply had good, proper hygiene, which, of course, was not practiced in the early 1900s, she would have helped minimize the spread of the disease and, of course, good food preparation. And then I also talk about how Mary was the first person to be forcibly quarantined for knowingly spreading the disease. In fact, Mary refused to believe that she was making people sick because she was asymptomatic. So that question allowed me to reinforce a lot of the key points about hepatitis, but also reinforce hand washing and talked about, and I can really, in a way, talk about vectors, about how things can spread. So again, on the surface, these infectious diseases, but really I use it as a springboard to reinforce other key points. Does that kind of make sense?
Sure. No.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Do you think though? I've done mostly games as most of a review concept, and I think some of it is the way I present it. But I can sometimes the groups can get pretty competitive, and they just want more questions because they want to score points and they want to beat the other team or make the other team look like people saying, you know. Let's get another question. Let's keep this thing moving. Or do you get that dynamic, or is it just the way I'm setting up the game?
I think to a certain degree, and I can't speak 100% for how I set up the game, but I can tell you from my personal experience. Last month, I reviewed pharmacology. So I had drugs like meg sulfate in a variety of different games. And I had, like, I think 20 questions. I used, I think, 23 questions, and I went through it in an hour. So first of all, it's going to take me, you know, each of those questions has a point, and we'd even stop. Let's mix up the meg sulfate. Let's get the Buretrol out, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that you need to really clarify if you're using a game. The students, it can be fun. But in a way, if you set it up right, the students will know that what the objective is. That's to deliver information. What I found with the pharmacology, I'll use that. I put this game together really quickly, and I actually made a few mistakes. But because the audience knew, they just sensed the way I set the game up that this my objective was to deliver the information in with the game. So everybody answered the questions. But what happened was is I made a few bonehead mistakes with wrong answers and bad wording. And afterwards, the people said, you know, that didn't hurt it at all because they knew there was no prizes. The objective was not to see who was going to win or lose. It just created a little more fun environment. And it was what happened is when every time we went back to the question, I got their focus. It was much easier to keep them focused on the material and the questions at hand so I can deliver the information. So, yeah, I think a lot of it's how you set it up. If you're trying to go through questions too fast and it does get too competitive, I can tell you from police and paramedic, sometimes we get a little hyper. And so you got to be a little careful because it's like you already, you know, the game, I found the game can be very effective even if you take a lot of the gaminess out of it. It can be highly effective and still fun. Then if you start adding ringing devices, things like that, it's like giving a hyperactive child sugar. You know, so you have to kind of balance a little bit what's effective and what's, you know, what's a distraction. And that's one of the things that I practiced over the years by experience.
Well, now, ringing devices, you brought up something. I was going to ask you if there was any kind of hardware compatibility with these handheld devices in classes.
Well, I think, you know, what I have found, I'll go back when I first did my first training in Woodbury, and we had the software, so it wasn't even that sophisticated, and it really created a lot of energy and excitement. But a year later, I went out to another police department that I trained for 15 years. I hadn't trained for 3 or 4 years. They asked me, can you come back and do our training? So I did, and I forgot the ring-in devices. because I just assumed, you know, we got to have a ringing device. And when I did, I was kind of pissed off at myself. But once I got into the training, it was the smoothest session I ever had. And I realized right there and then that for this market, and you got to look at your market, it became a distractor. It did not benefit or, you know, remember the old classifications of American Heart, you know, more likely to cause harm than help. I found a lot of times that the ringing devices became a distractor. They created such hyper competitiveness. The ringing devices became a contest within themselves. So by taking that out of it, I was able to control the game, and I went round robin, and it did not in any way affect the enjoyment factor of the game from the student's perspective, but it allowed me to have better control of the group. And that was really an eye-opener for me. And now we use audience response pads where I will never use ringing devices again unless my objective is to go out there and have fun and create a game show environment. Then that's a different objective. But if my game is to deliver content, then I want to do it in a controlled environment. I want to make sure I control how things go and not have the audience control me. And I found with the ringing devices, I had the whole office come out and see me do this police department because they did not believe what I was saying. And their quote was, any lesser of an instructor was an experience, would never got this group back. I was fortunately able to get them back down after each question, but it really was draining. So the audience response pads are a little bit different, and I can talk about that, you know, a little later on if we have some time.
Well, I was just going to ask about that, John. I mean, the rest of us know what response pads are, but maybe for some of our listeners, you can just explain what they are, what they do, and how they function in the classroom.
I think the most traditional way people know about audience response pads is with PowerPoint, and there's lots of different products out there, and you know, a little tie-in directly with PowerPoint presentation. Here's a question, or maybe here's it could be a question right or wrong, or it could be a question about opinion, and I can poll the audience right there and then. What we do with ours is directly in with the software. So I may put a question up there. Here's a question that I use commonly in my examples. You know, I may have a scenario. Here's a diabetic, you know, and then here's my question. Diabetes is a disease that causes what? So I have maybe 30 or 40 people in the classroom, and my answers are high blood sugar, A, B, low blood sugar, and C, obesity. So everybody go ahead and place your answers. And what's interesting is I found with that particular question, even with EMS people, I'd get about a 35, 40, 50% split between high and low. And the beauty of that was is I knew right there and then what the whole audience knew. And I was able to do corrective action right there. In this case, it was perfect because I can identify the common misconception because we don't teach EMTs anymore about high blood sugar. We teach them altered level of consciousness, you give sugar. So we have conditioned as well as the public that diabetes is about low blood sugar. But we know diabetes is much more than that. So it allows me to know what the audience knows, you know, and then move forward. If I just got done doing a talk, and I'm using this as a review, and I got that type of response back, it's telling me my audience didn't get it during my presentation. So in this case, the game is being a mask. I'm really, truly, independently evaluating each person independently as a group, but their collective scores are going to a team. So we kind of create a little competition, but they're interacting with the game, and everybody's interacting, even the most shy person in the back of the room who normally with ring-in devices may not participate or verbally participate, they are now participating. And I can even track the results.
So what about gaming outside the classroom? Do you create applications that allow people to take that out on their own and do some self-directed learning through gaming or quizzes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a few different components. Obviously, the classroom is where we kind of started off with, and now we're creating games for, you know, learning management systems. We'll track results. You know, basically, it's just and I think, you know, so you could do it online, self-directed. After I did the infectious disease for a couple of years, now we go online through the game. And then in there, I, you know, obviously have to word the questions differently, but there's a question, and then there's a way they can review the information afterwards, and then, you know, make adjustments. And then that's certainly you can do that as a way to review. It depends what your objective is, and that's always the key thing when you create a game in the classroom or on the web. Mm-hmm. You got to clearly identify what is your objective, just like you would if you're going to do a PowerPoint.
Have any instructors ever use these as kind of like a grade or anything in?
You know, we work with so many different markets. EMS is where we started off, but now we're working, I mean, I'll just name drop, Google has purchased our software, Nintendo. So we see it in a lot of different markets. And, of course, K through 20, we're seeing, you know, we see a lot of uses as well. So obviously you can do it for anything. Hmm. It's just how – it's really how you write the question. I did a talk about 2 years, and one of the common things is, well, yeah, I can see a game like this to, you know, if you want people to memorize things, you know, but – how does it really get them to the thinking process? Well, again, it depends on how you write your questions and what your objectives are. Mm. So I can do a game to deliver information. So like one of the questions somebody asked me was, okay, I get it if reviewed something and I want to use the game to review that. But how do I use a game to teach somebody if they don't know it? Well, it depends on what the objective is. And certain things won't work, of course. But like if I'm going to teach like a police officers and I want to talk about tuberculosis. So my first slide, I'm going to have a preview slide. I'm going to give them a little bit tidbit of what tuberculosis is. It's a bacterium. It's most susceptible when you inhale it when it's airborne. So that's what you need to know. And then here's my question. When you're transporting a person in your squad or your ambulance that has an active TB, what can you do to help minimize your risk? And I have four answers. So I'm getting them to think through the process. Then they answer the question. I use the audience response paths. I know how the audience is thinking. And then I can correct it. And then I'll after that slide, add a little more tidbit, a little more information. And then the next question I'll say, okay, you just finished transporting somebody to the hospital or to the jail. What is one of the first things you can do to prepare your squad or your vehicle for service? And I have a few answers. And there is like, you know, open up your doors. And again, it just kind of reinforce and build the information. Mm-hmm. So again, I've got their information. I'm able to keep their attention. And so it's, again, it's how you build the question. I think the one mistake people make with games is they think there's, you know, you do it one way for all different topics. But again, like a PowerPoint, what is your objective? If your objective is that just to have fun, then how I'm going to build a game is going to be totally different. If my objective is to deliver information or review information, then I build it this way. If I'm going to actually teach something, then I build it in a slightly different way, just like I would with a PowerPoint presentation.
You know, I came up with kind of a usage for this. I had this thing I used to do in my classes a lot. Of course, you know, all educators have probably found out that not all of your students read the assignment they were supposed to read before they come in. And so,
no way.
Yeah. You know, believe it or not, that happens every now and then. And I used to get so mad at this that I actually came up with a system to thwart it. And what I did was, at the very beginning of class, I would have a reading quiz. And the reading quiz only consisted of, like, really between 4 and 5 questions. And it was constructed in such a way that if you read the chapter, you would get 100. If you did not read the chapter, it was really obvious. And this material, I could go back and go, hey, you failed the last 2 reading quizzes. It's obviously you're reading the test and have a conference with a student. But, you know, after a while, you do this for like 10 chapters, and the students just look at it as something punitive. And not only that, but it's a lot of time-consuming stuff as an instructor to print out quizzes for an entire class every day for just this reading assignment, and it became a chore. It would seem like if you were going to follow that line of questioning, or line of action, that making it into a game might make it less threatening, less punitive. You wouldn't have to print it out. You could record the scores very easily. You know, just kind of an icebreaker at the first of class and just bang it out and get it done. That's kind of interesting. I wish I kind of had this information.
Colleges are already on, you know, you look at a lot of the bigger colleges, University of Minnesota. When a student comes in and buys their book in the bookstore, depending on the class they're taking, they actually buy their own personal audience response pad. And they actually go into a website and they actually log in, so an instructor gets it. These instructors are, you know, basing a certain percentage of their score on audience response. They're even taking attendance.
Oh, wow.
The thing, you know, you look at, you know, there's really a few different components. There's the K through 20, you know, and, you know, that market. And again, you have a different motivator, and that's grades. Well, you know, my market where I'm working, learner that's, you know, it's in a job. And that's a little bit different market. I got to tell you, you know, unless somebody takes an ACLS class or ITLS class or whatever, they don't get quizzed on things. So what we're implementing here at Woodbury, we just bought, you know, 60 pads, games, and the PowerPoint. And and I'm training. I'm training the staff how to do it. But what we're going to do is we're going to slowly implement. So next, you know, hopefully in 6 months, we're going to say, in this month, we're going to be doing pharmacology review. Here are the drugs we're going to review. We're going to do a game, but we're going to assign the pads. And, you know, we'll do this very slowly. And we're going to assign the pads to you. And we're going to actually start, we're going to keep it anonymous where it's, you know, only, you know, the management or the education team knows. But we're going to start holding you accountable and see if we see problem areas. And if we do, you know, what we're hoping is that once people realize we're looking at their scores, that when we say we're going to cover this next month, that they'll get out the protocol book and review some of the stuff. Just like you would in a classroom, say, hey, next week we're going to have a quiz on this, and that's going to force people to read it because they're grade motivated. And so there's a lot of different things like that you can look at. And again, the game, to a certain degree, kind of masks true intent. This is really an assessment tool. And in the back end, when this game gets done, it tracks every single question, how everybody responded to each question, how fast it took them to ring in, what their overall percentage was at the end of the game. And you can look at all that data. And you can also see what are your weaknesses, what are their weaknesses, what do you need to improve on. I did start triage.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you know, the thing that I'm kind of thinking through is like, okay, you know, at one point, instructors had a set of transparencies and they put those up on an overhead projector and used one of those markers and wrote on them. And now, then after that, it was like, hey, we got to make PowerPoint slides. And they did all that. And now, then the next step probably was like, hey, you should put all your stuff in this learning management system. And now here's this new thing, like, you know, let's convert all our, well, not all, maybe some of our training to a game. And, you know, I'm thinking about the development time that's required for an instructor that, you know, probably has limited prep time as it is. And then also, like, how do you balance, you know, just like we've seen people overdo the whiz bang in PowerPoint at the expense of the content. How do you, I guess, find the time? What kind of know-how do you have with like software and computer programming? And then how do you avoid like overwhelming with whiz bang at the expense of actually accomplishing objectives?
I think that's you know, probably what I tell people, you know, obviously it depends. If you're going to build something from PowerPoint, you can use templates and they're out there. And I think to a certain degree, games themselves can be very effective. Now, the problem with PowerPoint type of games is it's very difficult to make changes. And you have to find a way to put summary information in, because I believe you should go beyond the question. So the answer to your question, to a certain, what I find is, it is coming up with the content, the questions. But the questions, again, if you look at the questions do not have to be the teaching topic. In fact, I really, unless you're preparing people for a test and you want them to kind of memorize or get prepared for the test, look, keep your questions short and simple and use the summary information to deliver the points you want to make. What people will do is they'll put this really super long question and super long answers because they're trying to make the teaching point within the answer, and it's like, just use the question as a bullet point. In fact, I'll even do questions because, again, my objective is I could care less who wins or loses. I'm just using the game. Sometimes I'll create questions that really don't have clear-cut answers because I want to create it as a discussion. And if you set up the game as – and people kind of – people sense when I'm doing it. They know I'm using it as a way to deliver information, and they actually appreciate that. I don't get into this cutthroat as much versus if I went in and say, okay, we're going to have this prize. Whoever wins, you know, gets this. Well, now I've just created a cutthroat and I better have my good questions or those people going to argue with me. But very candidly, I think like with PowerPoint, sometimes coming up with the content is the toughest part for people, be right. It a game or PowerPoint. And then how are you going to deliver it? So when I tell people when they're going to do a game, figure out what is your objective. And in most cases, if it's in the classroom, our objective is not to have fun. That is not our objective. Our objective is to deliver X, Y, and Z. Now, we will use fun or anything else we can to help us accomplish our objective. But make sure when you walk in, don't measure your success because the students love it. Because I guarantee if I use a game instead of my PowerPoint lecture, infectious diseases, it will be fun. That's not the problem. The problem is, will it be educational? And so you have to have those measurables. I think there's a lot of different software out there, C3 Softworks, but there's more and more evolving where a lot of these things are WYSIWYG, where you open it up. In some respects, in many respects, they're a lot easier to use than PowerPoint. There's no hyperlinks. It's easy to edit your questions. You just type in your question, your answer, which is right, and you have a spot to type in, you know, extra information, or bring in images, or bring in PowerPoint slides. So a lot of it's getting simpler.
So before you go any further, we should remind people that WYSIWYG is what you see is what you get editing. And yep. That's essentially, you know, like when you're making a PowerPoint slide, that you're not actually doing computer programming. You're formatting, and what you see in the programming window is what you will see displayed.
And John, what about graphics? Just looking at your website, C3 Softworks, and I noticed there's a place on the website where you can sort of practice putting together a quiz right online, and there's a tab for graphics. Do you, because what I kind of envision is, in terms of a self-directed game, adding video clips, does it have that ability to have like a scenario in a video clip format and followed by a series of questions?
Absolutely. In fact, Spinoff is one of our games, and that's made up of a wheel, which I usually rig the wheel. I don't want to, set it up for people, but it's like Vegas. It's rigged. But basically what it does is just like you can have up to 10 categories. When a category comes up, the first question, I could put a video that precedes the question. So maybe you want to put a question on there, a video on there that's going to be 2 minutes long, and it's going to talk about something. And now the next seven questions will reference that video. So I can do that thing in a specific order. Again, each game is slightly different in how it works. Spinoff and Billionaire Game are pretty much, sequential versus quiz show. If you let the students pick, it can be in any order. So you have to really look at what you're trying to accomplish. So yeah, you can put FLV and SWF files, which these are kind of flash-based video formats, which now is becoming more and more common with a lot of video programs where you can export to this format, because ultimately, 98% of the computers out there have flash, and that's how our software works. The nice thing about the graphics is it doesn't have that PowerPoint look for the most part. You can actually open up a game, not even put content in it, save it, and you have a nice professional graphic look. And then you can make your own avatars or turn them off or whatever you want to do. And these are things really, to me, when we put the avatars in, I wanted to make sure they were not a distractor to what my core objective was. So a lot of times, again, it's just you can take it to any degree you want. If you have very limited graphics, you can just bring in PowerPoint slides by just exporting a single PowerPoint slide as a JPEG or a still image, and just bring that in and use that as a talking point.
And can you create games online where, say, two students from two separate locations can go on and compete with one another, where they're maybe watching a video and sort of racing against the clock to answer questions first?
Not with this particular software, but I'm sure you do see that with a lot of pre-made stuff where it's all programmed in, and that's probably something down the road we may look at. Right now, we just can't doing something with webinars where I can actually I can put a game up like with Citrix WebEx GoToMeeting. We use that, and I can send off a screenshot of my game, and I'll send you all off virtual pads. And then we can play the game remotely, and I can get your responses just like it would in the classroom. So I can have a game come up, hey, what do you guys think of this? Here's a question, you poll. That's about the closest we have right at the moment. So we're just working with the webinar component of it. And we're going to do a webinar in November and just kind of show the audience response pads and games, but we're going to actually do a virtual using the virtual pads because everybody's going to be all over the country.
Yeah, I think this is a good time for me to mention that on both November 4th and November 11th at noon, John and I are going to be hosting webinars using games to teach, breathe life into your presentation, where we'll actually be playing a game. We're going to present the content with the game. Attendees will be able to use these virtual audience response pads. We did one of these a couple weeks ago, and we got some really great feedback on it that it was good, and now we're trying to make it even better because we're going to jump right into playing a game, and people will get to experience it. And then after they experience it, we'll break it apart a little bit on how we set it up and how you might use games to deliver training content. So I'll have Buck put the the links to those webinars in the show notes, and anybody's welcome to join us for one or both of those sessions.
And John, that kind of leads into my next question. You talk about the response pads that that you have available, and one of the things that I've been sort of exploring is this concept of having students use their own cell phone, because it's you know, the trouble I find with the response pads is students either have to purchase them, or we get a bunch in the school and you drag them to the classroom. But you know, almost everyone has a cell phone. Have you looked at incorporating that kind of technology with your product?
I think we're pretty close to it. I mean, we haven't actually done that per se. Most of it, we're working a lot with industry. And one of the things, and Greg and I were talking about this the other day, is in some respects, like the University of Minnesota, one of the things they're saying, we're trying to get students to turn off their cell phones. However, that being said, we're having laptops now that can have wireless. So, I mean, to a certain degree, you can't get away from it. And I think that is coming. It's already available now. I mean, theoretically, even with our stuff, as long as you have a web browser in your cell phone, you could actually respond. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff out there you can actually even text, which gets cumbersome. You know, the problem is that, you know, most people I'm teaching, you know, just getting to, you know, use their phone and text. Technology is getting easier, and I definitely envision that. And it actually would be a less of a burden for some organizations for cost.
I was just going to say, just on a bit of a different track, you mentioned that you know, the games have the ability of tracking responses, either using the response pads or, you know, via the web. And I noticed that you have LMS, learning management system settings. So is the product then SCORM compliant so that it can be used within your learning management system to track it in your learning management system, or is it only tracked within the game itself?
It does both. It depends what you want. It does SCORM, and then also we like to call it the poor man's LMS, where if you don't have that, at least you can set it up where it'll send out emails and you can check the results on a admin page.
And for teachers out there, other educators out there who aren't familiar with you know, SCORM compliance, is a game, once it looks like the games are pretty easy to develop yourself, and once you've developed a game, is it easy to just plug it into a learning management system and it happens automatically, or do you usually need someone who manages your LMS at your school to make that connection?
I've worked with quite a few people working with Moodle, and basically all you do in the game software, at least in this our software, is just like you would with any SCORM package. You just make your game and you go into the LMS setting. What do you want the percent to be, or the passing score, and name your game, and go up and go file, say a package for SCORM, and it creates a zip file, and that's what you upload. That's it. Nothing cool. Complicated. You just got to know your LMS interface, and each LMS interface is different in how they handle it, and sometimes that's a little bit of a learning curve. But yeah, I know a lot of departments that are just starting to get into LMS, and they're using the Moodle. And in fact, I did a tech support call last week with somebody from, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, and they're going to start using it more and more, and they're using the software to teach some of the drier topics like sexual harassment, etc. So, you know, and that's one of the things. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so let's say you create a game, and you know, it's pretty difficult to keep pace with the changes in you know, pre-hospital care, and you know, today's dogma is tomorrow's dog doo-doo, and the drug we give today will be the drug we shouldn't give tomorrow. And so is it pretty easy to go into a game and just edit it and change it, or once it's created, it's good?
No, it's totally adjustable. Oh, my heavens. I am the worst. I will put a game, I'll have to make an adjustment between the next one. So I'm constantly making changes. You just need to open it back. It's like PowerPoint. You know, as long as you just open it back and make changes as you fly. And that's the key thing, because things are dynamic, and we do realize, you know, that's a bad question, or, you know, I did it last month with the pharmacology. I realized the first night I had some bad questions. So I quickly made some adjustments right at the end of the night while I was fresh in my mind. So the next session, I didn't have the same problems. So, yeah.
That brings up a question. When you purchase the software, and maybe you could describe how that works for educators, but when you purchase the software, what kind of license do you get? If you do a lot of online education, can you insert this into your program and charge other people for it? Are there any restrictions in the licensing?
No, we got people that actually, like with like web and LMS, they will make games and, you know, we're in a lot of different markets. We got people that are doing it for, you know, safety and you know, a lot of compliance stuff, and then they'll sell their LMS or the stuff. And, you know, it's yours. You know, specifically web, you can put a game on your website and you're not restricted on when you'll play it. You can put an LMS, you're not restricted on when you'll play it. You know, you buy the software and the software is licensed for that. In respect to the builder and stuff, it's just like PowerPoint. If you're going to put it in three computers, you need three licenses and so on and so forth. The unique thing about the software, though, is you do not need the builder to play the game. So if you make a game, I could put it on memory stick. I could physically go to another computer without installing any software and play the game. A lot of times it's just the licensing. You just license that computer. But you don't need to install software because it's all Flash-based. And there are certain things you can set up. Well, I don't know how many teams I'm going to have, so I'll set up in the game that I can adjust the team names and the number of teams, and I can do that. I can't adjust any of the questions or the settings, but at least I can play it on another computer. So you have options like that.
And with this sort of digital authoring tool, oftentimes you know, software companies will sell one version where the company logo, C3 Softworks, for example, is on there every time, so that at the end of the game, people see where it came from, and it's a marketing tool. Do you have like a sort of an upper cost version where that logo is not there, so that it becomes sort of unidentifiable for those people not interested in doing the marketing piece?
Yeah, the only time our stuff comes up is when the game is first launched. Now we do have an intro screen, but you can turn that off. So when the game is first launched, if you're in the classroom specifically, it comes up so fast you won't even see it. And we have, for certain customers, disabled that. So, but once the game's in play, you don't know us. In fact, we've got people that, because they make it look like they made their own, because they'll put their own graphics in it, dress it up, you can put the graphics on the avatars. So they'll actually, like we did one was, you know, FedEx Singapore, where they actually made FedEx avatars with FedEx uniforms. And, you know, so they make it look like they had the game customized just for them. So you certainly can do that. But yeah, go ahead.
Rob, this type of question comes up with different e-learning software. You know, I use Articulate to create PowerPoint Flash, and one of the most common forum questions is, how do you remove the Articulate logo? And, you know, similar things related to e-learning. And I always think it's a little bit odd because, like, whenever you use PowerPoint slides, like, everybody knows you're using PowerPoint, but you don't have to disclaim it at the front, like, hey, I'm using PowerPoint. I guess it's an odd thing for me, just in terms of, you know, presenters don't want the audience to know that this is Articulate, and then Articulate's always the default is to have the logo on there. You know, it's always been a little bit odd to me, this whole conversation of, you know, first of all, like, why do the software vendors do it, and then why do the educators care? And I'm not getting to any real point here. It's just it's perplexing.
You know, I think it's just a personal preference. You know, it's like, you know, if I have someone come to renovate my kitchen, I just have no desire to have the sign, you know, popped into my front lawn advertising the company unless they're going to give me a significant discount. You know, I think it's just one of those personal preference things for educators. So it's nice to know for some if that option to remove it is there and Articulate does allow you to pay a bit of a premium to enable you to remove the logo.
Right. It's just like the textbook, though, is always going to have the name of the publisher on the textbook.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
You know, I always, the first thing I do in the three times I've had a new car in my life is take off the little sticker the dealer puts on with their name on the back. So, you know.
That's exactly. You put the license plate cover on that says Paramedics Save Lives instead.
No, I put on Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin Badgers, but.
Oh, there you go.
That's just me.
Oh, let's not go to the Badgers again.
You know, I think, John, this has been an interesting conversation and a lot of ideas. And, you know, I think you know, games have always been a part of learning, and, you know, using software is just part of the evolution. Like we've gone from transparencies to PowerPoint slides, and, you know, educators have used different types of games for teaching content to use the game to teach. Is the novel idea, I think, especially when it comes to the electronic stuff. So thanks for your thoughts and ideas about that tonight. I've appreciated
you guys inviting me into your humble abode here, or whatever it is. Okay, so
hey,
I'm
we're
gonna
about
have chili for
being
dinner
over
tonight,
the
so.
Top. There's no humility here.
I see that.
Maybe more humble you thought.
I resemble that.
I'm just kidding.
Well, hey, is there anything we can cover that you'd like to say about your software? You know, something we just missed, you know?
You know, the one thing I'm very, very, very truthful here. When I talk about games, I'm really, truly passionate about the game side. And the software is kind of, you know, obviously that's what we're here for. But I'm really passionate about using games as a good teaching tool. And I'm, you know, I will – at Woodbury, I'm practicing all the time. What, is this working? Is this effective? And I think the biggest thing I like to just leave people with is a lot of people come looking at the games. Well, you know, if they look at it in such a limited way, they don't realize how much more can open up for them. And a lot of times, I know in the webinars I've done, it usually takes about 10 minutes just showing three or four examples of how I'm going to use a game to deliver content. And I think Greg can speak to this as well, but because Greg's read my articles, but I think when he actually saw me demonstrate it, you know, as in Greg's word, he had that aha moment. He finally got and saw the point. And I think to a certain degree, that's why I try to be very visual when I speak at conferences, and I'll be doing a keynote on Friday. I'll show people 9 or 8 examples of how I'm going to use questions to deliver a variety of different topics. And it's just really, I find myself got to deprogram how they've seen games. Because let's face it, how do most instructors learn to use games? By seeing other instructors use games. And the problem with that concept is most people never learn to do it properly in the first place. We keep learning bad skills, and we teach it because we thought it was fun, and we emulate that. And unfortunately, we're really missing our true objective, and that is to more effectively. And that's pretty much the closing thing I can think of here.
Cool. Well, where else,
John,
can we...
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't realize you're about to wrap up here. I just had one last sort of comment, and that was, I think this is cutting edge technology, and I think one of the things you've addressed through your software, John, is you know, the concern most instructors have is that they're content experts, they're not computer experts, and so they need something really simple to work with. And it sounds like that's what your product delivers. And the other thing I'm quite excited about is the whole gaming concept. You know, made a lot of sense to me up to gaming and education in the sense that you know, not only is it interactive and engaging, especially if you can do it in a self-directed manner, but the advantage of gaming over all of the other pedagogy we utilize today, where we deliver content and then people are tested, is that in the game, you know, people can engage with it, they can practice it and fail and try it again and fail and try it again and succeed and try it again and move further and try it again and move further even still. And there's, you know, opportunities for in some of the more advanced gaming technologies to collaborate and critical think and again continually progress forward, and you just don't get that in a standard education.
No, and I think you're absolutely right, and I think the problem is, and this is what I would tell people, I can put a PowerPoint presentation together and I can spew out information all day long, but the fact of the matter is, if my objective is to deliver that information, I can do that. I can deliver anything in an hour. The problem is, if my objective is to get my students to absorb it, then I have to go about it in a certain way, regardless if I'm using PowerPoint or using a game. And that's clearly what I try to tell people is, if you're saying, well, how is this different than PowerPoint? In a way, it is different. The whole thing is, we're trying to make our students an active participant as much as we can. If we can do a scenario, a sim man, great. But if I got to do a lecture and sometimes we can't get around it, what can I do to get my students to interact with my presentation versus sitting there being a recipient of my information? And as charming as I am, sometimes it's just tough to stay awake, even if I really want to learn this topic. So we got to find ways to keep their brains active and make them, you know, get them to, you know, interact with the instructor and the software and the presentation.
Outstanding. Buck. That's Buck. Do you want to bring us home?
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to let John give a chance to plug whatever he wanted. Are there other types of social media where people can find your presence?
I'm all over the place. I'm doing a series of games is a big thing, but I am also doing a bunch of stuff with showing, you know, instructors how to enhance their PowerPoints with Photoshop and trying to think a little bit outside the box. And that's kind of where I kind of come from. I'm doing a lot of videos, and, you know, if you go to EMS One, I've got Dead or Alive and Better Days, and we're like, I think I've got about 4 videos up there, and you can watch those. And those have nothing to do with gaming. It just kind of shows I still have this commitment to EMS, and as much as the company is growing in different directions, I'm still rooted in EMS. In fact, you know, 30 years, and I'm still going. You know, when I get people in my class and they look 30 years and they're going, I wasn't even born then. And that's when you know you've been doing this too long.
Yeah. Well, so, can people track you down on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere they want to get you?
All of the above, actually. Yep. They can go to Twitter, all of the above. And I think if you actually just Google my name, John Dillon Paramedic, I think I'll come up 3 or 4 pages. Not as much as Greg. I'm trying to, you know, get to that level. You know, unfortunately, first thing I see in the morning is Greg's email and his mug on EMS One and, you know, whatever. So,
Greg is surfing the Google wave.
Right. I'm trying. I've not tried it at all while we're on the podcast here, but someday we'll figure it out. We'll get a great wave.
It looks like a social network on steroids.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yes.
It looks like it would crash my computer if I opened it.
Well, I think there's today. Yeah, I think, Buck, you would be crashed.
Yeah. I'm in trouble. Well, Rob, where can
Greg,
we?
I was going to say, I think Greg is a social media.
Oh, look who it is. It's Chris Montero.
Hey, how are you? Sorry, I couldn't resist. I've been listening for the better part of an hour, and it was really good. Nice job, guys.
He snuck in towards the beginning.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're great. Well, Rob, where can we get a hold of you, buddy?
You can find me on my blog at paramedictutor.wordpress.com.
Awesome. And Greg, hey, let's pimp our thing we're doing next week.
What is that? Oh, yes, emsbootcamp.com. Buck is going to be instructing about the autonomic nervous system, and it's a live program. If you go to emsbootcamp.com, you can register. It's going to be a webinar, a GoToWebinar. It's at 1300 Central Time, 1400 Eastern Time, and you can register for free. If you do want to pay a small fee, you're going to get a lot of great add-on bonus products designed to complement the whole program. But Buck, the paramedic instructor, is going to put it all out there to teach about the autonomic nervous system. Mm-hmm. If you're an educator, tell your students to check it out. If you're an educator and think, I want to hear how another guy explains this, come listen to what Buck has to say. And again, emsbootcamp.com. Mm-hmm.
I want to see your vagal maneuver.
Or the circumferential.
No bearing down.
Well, this is one of the subjects that I get requested about because, somebody thinks I teach it very well. And there's a lot of students who just get bowled over by alpha and beta. So if you're an educator and you know somebody out there who's just, you know, one of your students maybe who is just not getting the autonomic nervous system, send them on by to EMS Boot Camp. We'll try and straighten them out for you. And like I said, you know, if you want to do something else. Also, guess what? We're using Citrix software to get this pulled off. GoToMeeting is what we're doing, and we're recording that and turning it into a webinar. How cool is that?
I hear your talk on the autonomic nervous system is so good that nobody experiences a fight or flight response.
Wow.
I just couldn't resist.
You do, yeah. You do.
I think I'm having a parasympathetic response to that joke. A little bit woozy.
So, Chris, you might as well join the party. Where are you going to be next week, you rat?
Well, I was just going to say there's something else I'm really pissed off about that has my adrenaline going. I heard you guys are taking over my show next week on EMS Garage. What's up with that?
Yeah, we're giving that a shot. actually, if you want to listen live to the EMS Garage next week at Tuesday night Eastern Standard time and 9 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the EMS Educast will take over the EMS Garage because Chris Montera is going to be, where are you?
I'll be in, I'm actually, that's what I was doing while you guys, while I was listening. I'm packing, I'm going to New Zealand.
Oh, talk about the ultimate of all, I want to go somewhere trips. Yeah. What are you doing over there?
Well, I'm going to be down there for the International Roundtable on Community Paramedicine and go to IRCP.info. And we're actually going to be doing the entire conference live with video. Can you believe that? We're going to be streaming it back to the United States. I know that that's kind of my job down there, and as well as I'm going to present too. But
where can we find that?
IRCP, or wait, I'm sorry, live.IRCP. So International Roundtable of Community Paramedicine dot info, and go there and look us up. We'll also be on Ustream. You can search IRCP on Ustream and you can find us there too. We'll have, you know, I'm kind of concerned because I'm not sure how many streams they're going to allow us back from New Zealand, but we're going to try and see. And if not, go there later and you can download every episode and watch it. We're going to be posting the content every hour. So you can download it right from the website. And then you can find me, Geeky Medic, everywhere. And John, I don't know if you still work for Woodbury, because I think I missed that very beginning of the episode. But if you do, I know JB pretty well.
So. Oh, okay. Yep, I still work for Woodbury.
Yeah.
So I'm practicing on the cop paramedics and the fire paramedics. And I cannot think of a better beta tester, because if anybody can break anything, it's going to be this group. I love them to death. Good God. You know, I got all these things in the software. We'll just call it the Woodbury fix.
Nice. Well, tell JB hi, because he's a good friend, and we've spent a lot of time in Kansas City together, so he's a good guy. So like,
You're down there for that. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm going to shut up now.
Well, John, are you going to be at the EMS Expo?
As a matter of fact, I will be at the EMS Expo.
Oh, go ahead. Guess who else is going to be in the EMS Expo?
Let me guess.
Just about everybody here. We're going to be doing live shows from the front floor. We're going to be doing the Garage, EMS Leadership, and, of course, the EMS Educast and all sorts of stuff. So please come by and say hello.
And I will definitely do that.
Yeah, we might even shove you in front of a camera. I'm going to try and hide in the shadows while that's going on. Remember all our listeners that we're going to be doing live shows from the showroom floor at EMS Expo. And the date's last week of October, but the dates escape me. When is that?
October 26th through the 30th.
October 26th through the 30th, and you can still get tickets. And Greg even has a discount code, doesn't he?
Yeah, I sure do. I have a discount code that's a $50 discount now instead of $100.
Oh, waiting too long.
People can still get that, and they can also use that same thing for free entrance into the expo hall. So they can just send me an email, gfreeze@eps411.com, and I'll send them that code.
Awesome.
And if they want to get in just to the show floor and can't afford to get in, we've got free passes to the exhibit hall. Email us emsgarage @gmail.com or emseducast@gmail.com. We'll give them all the info to get them in for free. There's not much in life for free, but this is.
As long as you can get yourself to Georgia, you'll be right. All right, well, that kind of wraps up, guys. And, man, we'd like to thank John Dillon for coming out and explaining gaming as education to us, and Greg Reese and Rob and Chris and the Funky Bunch. And this is Buck Ferris signing off for the EMS Educast. We will see you next week.